All right, great to have you back with us on this Sunday morning. Bruce Jenkins, how are you?
Doing well, Marty. What's going on?
Well, I guess the biggest thing that's going on is the Giants have been eliminated. Fine, you know, it was 1 in 8,000 that Andy Baggerly figured out. I don't know if he was right or wrong, but it was quite a season. And sort of I'll throw this question to you, as I said to Paul White and others yesterday. How would you sum this one up? This has been an interesting season. What would you say if you had to write this one up for history?
Well, it was obviously a huge disappointment. I mean, it became evident early that this wasn't the same team as last year that won 107. They sort of seemed doomed to the, I wouldn't say, maybe mediocrity is the right word, but it also, I think it was a real eye-opener in terms of you can't repeat the sorts of things that happened last year, aside from the pitching, of course, but with kind of a patchwork lineup and platooning and here and there, and it's especially as they lose a guy like Bryant, who you need every veteran you can. I think it was a real awakening for Farhan and Gabe and everybody else in the front office that, you know, the next year's team needs to be a lot different. The kinds of things we saw in the lineup this year, the defensive lapses, they can't happen again. And it obviously, you know, the notion of having two great starters, that was a blessing for the entire season, start to finish. And if they don't sign Rodon, they need to get somebody else in there. I think as much as they like Wood and Cobb and like that, they're used to having two studs. Last year they had Gausman in there plus Cueto, so they're not going to turn into the Yankees overnight in terms of the lineup. So they need another pitcher. Rodon would be perfect, and they've got to really mix it up in the field.
Well, a good analysis, Bruce. You know, the opener today suggests some things to me. And look, the good teams don't want to use openers. You're not going to see, you know, very many. Maybe Tampa Bay will use it once in a while, but they've really gotten away from it. But you need pitchers. You need pitchers. So I want to say this about the opener. What does the opener really do for you? Well, it puts your relief pitcher in the first inning, but it sends a message to your pitcher: we don't think you could get these guys out. we think you've got trouble, so we don't want you to face these guys two or three times. And now we're going to bring you in after that. So I think the message that it sends to the other pitcher is wrong. The other thing is, I think you need your top relief pitcher to pitch when you need him late in the game. Those are when games turn around. Giving up one run or two runs in the first inning is not going to sink you when you got nine more at-bats to come. So I think it's a failed strategy to waste one of your best relief pitchers in the first inning. So I'd like to see the Giants get away from it. And the last thing is, it tells me they have nobody in the upper levels of this farm system that they would trust as a starting pitcher in the major leagues. So that's my thought about the opener.
Yeah, well, yesterday was a perfect example. I mean, Alexander's out there. He's been doing well. You want to see how he does. He has a good first inning, and as soon as he gets the first guy in the second inning, Kuiper's already said, well, that's probably going to be his last batter. Really? What the hell are we doing here? I mean, let's have a look at the guy. He's pitching well. On paper, you want him to go an inning or maybe one more batter, but boy, by God, don't let him face that right-hander. I despise all of that stuff. And, you know, sometimes it's necessary. But to me, if you're going to do this and you have it all planned out, who's coming in the second and the third, if the first guy is lights out, I'm sorry, you tear up the page and you go with who's pitching good. And as far as the, you know, bringing the relievers, I mean, with the Giants, the bullpen's really kind of a hodgepodge. I mean, Doval is clearly the best, and he's the guy you want at the end. How they use the other guys, that when and how, that doesn't bother me that much. But you know, Doval is obviously the guy out there. Yeah, so that's the opener. That's the opening thing to me. What was your other point there?
Well, it's a message. You have nothing in the farm system.
Oh, yeah.
It's a message to your pitcher. We don't think you can get anybody out.
Yeah, you know, to have Alexander leave the field in the middle of his outing, why? What did he do wrong? It's never good to walk off the mound when when there's a sense of failure in the air. If it's a huge game or just something like this, it's just not good. It's good. Let him walk off the mound after a good performance and feel good. But I think they believe in Kyle Harrison in the minors. I mean, I would like to be seeing him right now. I don't know if they've somehow lost faith in him late in the going.
No,
but
he's in Double A. That's
yeah.
You know,
well, that's guys come up from Double A all the time. There's thousands of guys who come straight from Double A to the big leagues and do well. So that to me isn't enough. I'd love to get a little look at him here, but I don't. He's a guy I still think could figure next year.
I think so. I think he may make that jump, and it's a little easier for a pitcher to do it because it's the arm, and if you got the stuff in command, you can get it done. And I thought yesterday, the game got away in the seventh inning. Garcia comes in. He hasn't pitched in a week. And you have to say to yourself, all right, this is the seventh game of the World Series. If we lose this game, it's over. That's it. There is no tomorrow. And here we are in the seventh inning. They're fighting their way back into the game. And Garcia comes in. He hasn't pitched in a week. Probably comes in because there's some reason that they think he can get these hitters out, and they forgot who the person is, and he hasn't been around for a week, so they bring him in as opposed to fighting with the best possible relief pitcher that you know you've got. Bring in one of your top guys. I don't care who's coming up. Bring up your top. And wouldn't you have liked to have Alexander pitch in the seventh inning?
Well,
I'd
like to see Alexander in a more meaningful situation than eight pitches and you're gone in the middle of an inning or whatever. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think there was sort of a bit of a resignation that it was over. I mean, at the end of the game, Kruko and Kiefer didn't even mention that they'd been eliminated. You didn't hear that till the post game show. But I don't know. Alexander, the bottom line there is that he's a left-hander. He's been around a long time. He's 33 years old, Santa Rosa guy. But, he's looked good. He keeps the ball down. He throws strikes. He's not a flamethrower, but I think he's a perfect guy in a bullpen full of flamethrowers, especially if they're right-handed. So, yeah, to get him in and out of there early, I don't know. I wasn't a big fan of that.
No, he's the best they got.
Yeah.
He's the best they got, and you wanted him in that situation that turned the game around. And that was it for me. All right, so that's my rant on the opener. All right, I have to get it out today, the last show of the year here.
The closer, yeah.
that's my rant on the opener. All right, now, moving players around. This is the other thing that bothers me, and if you look at games that the Giants lost and the defense killed them all year long, how come? Well, you take players, and just because you think I can put Estrada in left field and nothing bad will happen, or I can put Vosler in left field and nothing bad will happen, or I could put Peterson in left field, bad things happen. You can't move people around like this. There are rare people. The Chris Taylors of the world, the Kiki Hernandezes, are rare people in baseball. You can't force that to happen, and I think it bites the Giants more often than not.
Yeah, well, it's the price you pay when you assemble a roster like this. So few of these guys are, 280 hitters and very good defenders. Maybe they'll be one or the other, and that's what leads to, we'll try them here and there, and that's just not a recipe. It's not like, our infield is, Belt and Crawford and Panic, and we've got things set here that you can just rely on. Not only do you see them every day, but they are good defensively. And that's the puzzle that they're going to have to solve for next year, because you see Jock Peterson in left, even before it happens, you're horrified.
It can't happen. You cannot have that. And I'll tell you something. I don't. The other thing, as long as we're on Jock Peterson for a second, he's out of shape.
Yeah,
and,
he really is.
And he's heading in that as they like to say, he's trending in that direction. And this is not good. You don't want to be involved with that. And, is he going to turn into, Rowdy Tellez? Is he going to look like him next week? You can't rely on that. And if they get involved with him for more than 1 year, it's a huge mistake.
Yeah, he's trending toward barbecues on Sunday instead of ball games. But
trending is not good.
If you're Jock Peterson, you got to look in the mirror. First of all, that's not a good thing just to begin with. But you know, if other teams looking at him, the guy obviously is a hell of a hitter, just by nature, and he's done a lot of things. But he is overweight, and he seems to be on a bit of a downslide. What's the appeal to the other teams? I mean, if I were him, I'd try and get in the best possible shape I could for the spring and maybe give yourself some new life.
Well, years ago, he's Smokey Burgess. He's Dusty Rhodes. You know, he's Jerry Lynch. He's one of those pinch hitters that we love when we grew up. Mm-hmm. And that's, but they have to make a decision on him. That's my point in this whole thing, is I hope they don't get involved for 2 or 3 years with him, because I think that would be a mistake. I think that would be a mistake. So we'll see. We'll see where that goes. All right. The Mets and Atlanta. What a series, Bruce. This has very big implications here on what's going to happen in this National League pennant race as to who wins this division and who gets to set their pitching up. And they've beaten DeGrom and Scherzer.
Yeah, they have. And Scherzer gives up a home run to Swanson and Olsen yesterday after DeGrom got lit up. So the Braves, today is such a huge game, Marty, because the season series is 9-9, and whoever wins today owns the tiebreaker, if it comes to that, with the division. And that's, it just makes so much difference between having to go into a wild card series or sitting back and waiting for that and getting your pitching in order. And the Braves are really looking good. They've got Charlie Morton going today against Bassett. Big, big outing for Bassett. Just is huge for both of them, really. But the Mets just needed one win in this series to clinch the season series and own the tiebreaker. And now they might not get it. They might get swept. So it's fascinating stuff. We're talking about a must watch game.
Well, it's huge for the Mets because if they've got to use Scherzer and DeGrom in the 3-game series, or perhaps this week, one of them may have to pitch. You may have to bring one back, but I doubt that. But if you had to use them in the 3-game series, look what it does to you in the 5-game series. And that's the biggest problem right there.
Yeah, I think they'd be lined up to have DeGrom, Scherzer, and Bassett in that 3-game series, but that's just the last thing you want.
Then you don't see him. Yeah, then in the 5-game series, if you win that, then you don't see him again. Until you may see one of them in the 5-game series.
Yeah.
Big deal for the Mets. Big deal.
Today is so huge. And the Braves aren't sure if they're going to have Strider in the postseason, so they don't want to avoid any of these complications either.
No, having like Kyle Wright, 21 wins. How about that? I mean, that to me is amazing.
That really is. He snuck up on me for sure. I'm so conditioned that there aren't going to be any more 20-game winners that I wasn't really following that particular stat. But it's still a great stat. It's somebody who's been a winner. You can't say winning is bad. You can't say wins are a bad thing, even though they've been so discounted with the way pitchers are used now. But, yeah, that's terrific. And, we'll see. It's going to be on him to come up in the biggest games of his life, and he looks like he's ready for it.
Bruce, during your career, you've covered so many playoffs and World Series for so many years, and it makes you so special in baseball. It really does. And I ask this question of Woe. You look at New York, L.A., Atlanta, St. Louis, Philadelphia, Milwaukee, San Diego, the potential places that we could have playoff games in the National League. Which one is the most intimidating to you?
Which team or which town?
Which venue? Yeah, which venue would be the most intimidating? So you got the Mets, L.A., Atlanta, St. Louis, Philly, Milwaukee, San Diego.
Well, you want to say St. Louis until you realize what the Giants did there. That Barry Zito game, that was a game they were going to lose, but they didn't. And so they can all be had. I think Shea might be in the lead. Philadelphia can be awfully overwhelming, but it can also be completely hostile to the home team, and it turns in a second, and next thing you know, you're the visitors and you're looking good. Atlanta is a weird sports town. I would never rank them high in any regard. But Shea is tough, and those fans are believers. And Dodger Stadium is obviously very, very tough. That's a tough place to win, and when it's all jammed and the fans are going crazy and everything else. But I would say Shea. It's close, but I'd go with Shea. How about you?
I would probably go New York. That's where I would be with you on that one. As Woe says, you can get 60,000 in L.A. that could go crazy, too. Now, San Diego is not going to get a home game. They're going to be on the road, undoubtedly. No matter where their seat is, they're going to be on the road here.
Yeah.
Right? Well, let's see. I guess they could be home against the five. They can't, because they can't come in fourth. So they're going to be on the road, and they're going to be on the road in the five-game series. So if San Diego was home, Bruce, I would think that may be the wildest place this year because they've gone crazy.
Yeah, I think we're going to talk about that 84 playoff series a while.
That's
But that town is capable of tremendous support. It really is. You know, you could go years without seeing it, but, you know, when it does happen – it's crazy down there, and then now they're in the gas lamp district. Unbelievable scene. I hope they get a home game because this team deserves it.
Well, if they got in the five game series, they would.
Yeah,
three game series they won't, and that's why it's important to win this division. The division actually became very important this year with this three game series. It's a big deal.
Yeah. I was always opposed to the one-game wild card playoff because if you're the visiting team here, you're a fan of that team, and you've been following them for 162, and you can't even see them in the postseason, maybe. But the way it's lined up now, it's a best of three, but they're still all in one place, and I don't know how you fix it. You know, if you open on the road all of a sudden, and you lose, now you're going home 0-1. That doesn't seem very fair. So there's no fair way out of it. But this year, it's strictly, it's all in one place. It's great for the travel, but it's tough for the visitor.
All right. So let's see how it works out. I like that they're trying it.
It's better than one. Better than one.
As I said to Raf, this is something we've never seen before, how this thing turns out because of the depth of the pitching and how you're going to use them this week. And, how you're going to strategize your pitching is going to be key for me in this whole month, the whole month of October. All right. Triple Crown. We've been following this all year. Aaron Judge, he's 2 points behind Arraez of Minnesota. Bruce, Arraez is a slap hitter. The Giants ate him up. Judge is at 313, Arraez at 315. They don't pitch to Judge, but he's got 4 days, I guess 4 games to do it.
Yeah, well, it's all, with Judge, it's either he hits a home run or they're pitching him too carefully. There's not a lot of singles and doubles in there for me. And Arraez is he's a very good hitter, disciplined hitter, and he's a slap hitter. He's thinking base hits. I don't know. I got to go with Arraez there. If Judge were to sneak here and win it, because he's obviously got the home runs and the RBIs wrapped up, he's 8 ahead of Jose Ramirez in the RBIs, which I would probably hold up. I like Arraez, but it'd be terrific if Judge can pull that off.
Yeah, and he's only 2 points behind. That can happen. I think because we talked yesterday about Tony Gwynn over Will Clark and Puckett over Carney Lansford that sort of decided the last day. So it can happen for Judge. Freddie Freeman looks like he's going to wrap that up, the batting title in the National League. Goldschmidt will come in third.
Mm-hmm.
But how about Schwarber? 44 home runs, Bruce. Alonso's got 40. How about that?
Yeah, and the two biggest came yesterday in that second game. It turned into a rout, and there were other guys hitting home runs. But Schwarber to hit two, Harper's not really coming through lately. And that team's, they're on the ropes, and the fans are nervous, and they're talking about 1964 and everything. And Schwarber's anchoring this stretch drive right now. 44 homers is awesome. He did bang out two yesterday, and he's so calm and composed up there and so dangerous. So he's probably going to win the home run title. Alonso, you never know. He could hit three, 2 days in a row. But I definitely like Schwarber there. And what's the RBIs? What's going on with the RBIs?
Alonso
got that wrapped up.
Yeah, he's 17 ahead of Goldschmidt, and Judge is 8 ahead, as you point out, of Ramirez. The other one, let me say it. Freeman's got 196 hits. He's close to 200. I like that.
Yeah.
Bichette will never make it. He's 187. But how about this in walks? This is Eddie Stanky territory. Come on, Eddie Yost. Soto has 134 walks.
Who does? That?
Soto.
Well, yeah, that's kind of the saving grace of his season. He's hitting 240 something. I mean, this is for a whole season now. He's hitting about that since joining the Padres too. I'll say this about Soto. He's kept his he's not going crazy up there. He knows he's not producing, but he's not swinging wildly. Mm-hmm. He's not going after maybe one or two here and there, but he's drawing walks. He's getting on base. And yesterday, I'll tell you, it was a big day for the Padres. I've been so down on them, but Soto and Machado both homered yesterday, and they're closing in on it now. If they win today, that they're in. So
yeah. This is going to be a good one today. Let's see, they're playing the White Sox. Say it's Lance Lynn and Snell, who's been terrific. He may be the sleeper of the whole staff for the Padres. He's been terrific. I mean, really terrific all month.
Yeah, and the Sox don't really see him. I mean, this is going to be the first time for some of the guys, I would think. And lights out. Watch out for him.
Good end of the season. Good end of the season. All right, we do have a historical note today, and it goes back to 84, and it's the Cubs in the playoffs finally, and Rick Sutcliffe's on the mound. Very exciting.
Yeah, this Cubs, you know, the Cubs are trying to get to the World Series for the first time since, you know, World War II, and the Padres have never been in the playoffs, so they're squaring off, and Sutcliffe wins the opener 13-0. They hit a bunch of homers, and even Sutcliffe homers off Eric Schau, so they're rolling, and they win game two. The Cubs win two, so the Padres are down 0-2. And they're heading back home. They're down 0-2 in a best of five. And Tim Flannery goes, "We're all looking through travel magazines on the flight trying to figure out where we're going on vacation." So they get back to San Diego. The bus is late. They're taking a bus from the airport to Jack Murphy, and they're all down. And they get there, and there's like thousands of people waiting for them, just going crazy. They've been partying already because the bus was late. And Tony Gwynn goes, "I couldn't believe what I saw there. I don't know if we're going to win the series, but I guarantee we're not going to lose the next game." And they wound up winning the next three and completely shattered the Cubs and sent them back to 1908, you know, the last time they won the whole thing. And Steve Garvey had a walk-off to win game four. He had four hits in the game. And then in game five, Flannery actually figures huge. There were two ground balls in game five that really crushed the Cubs. And they'll never get over it. Flannery hit a ball that went through Leon Durham's legs at first. It tied the game in the seventh. And then Tony Gwynn hit a ball that got past Ryne Sandberg and rolled into center for a two-run double. Mm-hmm. And Garvey drives in a run, 6-3. Gossage ends it. And those two ground balls, if either one of them, you know, lands the way they're supposed to, it's a double play to end the inning, and maybe the Cubs win. But the Padres did win, and as I say, they got a massive boost from their crowd.
Wow. Boy, I didn't realize Flan hit the ball at Durham. I could still see
that?
Durham.
Pinch hitting. He was pinch hitting. Yeah.
Yeah, the glove never reached the ground, and right through his legs. I didn't realize that was Flan. And the other part of that one, the great journalist, the African-American wonderful lady, Claire Smith.
That
was the time she got thrown out of the clubhouse. They wouldn't talk to her. And the Padres were very reactionary, a bad crowd, and Garvey saved the day for her. Garvey came out and made sure she got her stories.
Isn't that something? That was just a Neanderthal setting there, you know, with a woman in there. Nobody has more class than Claire Smith, like, in the world. You know, and she's so respected and so, you know, respectful when she goes into a situation like that. But Garvey, Garvey was never better. All the stuff he did with the Dodgers, like I say, he owned game four of that series. He hit the walk-off. And then he was the one who said, "Listen, Claire Smith belongs, you know, in here as much as anyone, and let's treat her with respect." And, you know, good for him for all of his reputation. I always loved Garvey. I love watching him up there in a big situation, just, you know, turning on Gossage, you know, at Yankee Stadium for a double down the line. The guy was just nails.
Mm. Boy, beautiful. Well, Bruce, another year for us. This is probably 20 years. I've lost count, but it's an honor for me to talk to you about baseball every weekend. Nobody has a heart for baseball in the Bay Area nationally like you do, and I hope you get the award in December from the Baseball Writers Association to be enshrined in that with that award in Cooperstown. And I can't thank you enough for doing this every weekend. I love it.
Oh, geez, Marty, it's so mutual. You know, it helps keep me current with the games. I never want to be caught, you know, not knowing anything on the weekend. And it's truly an honor to be with you. We do share that love of history. And you know, congratulations to you and Raf Corral for 17 years. I've been talking to this guy before every show. And I, you know, behind the scenes, you know, there's a lot to be done, and you guys do it seamlessly. So big congrats to both of you guys.
Well, I appreciate it. I just want good news for you in December, and that's what I'm keeping my fingers crossed. So have a great we'll talk during the playoffs. We'll catch up with each other. All right.
Absolutely.
Be well. You sound great today. Thanks, Bruce.
Thank you, Marty.
All right. That is Bruce Jenkins. Wow. Well, I'll tell you, the time goes so quickly. Every year we do this together, and the best part, he and I get to sit at spring training in the stands and watch spring training. That's one of my highlights of my baseball life. But I look forward to next year with Bruce. Really, he's fabulous. All right, more coming up. Alan Hirsch, he's an author. Very interesting book, The Most Bizarre Plays of Baseball. And he's got a real good story about this. So Raf will get that ready. We'll come back.